From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with John S. Dickerson, pastor of Connection Point Christian Church near Indianapolis, and best-selling author of Jesus Skeptic, a journalist explores the credibility and impact of Christianity. Well, let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and John S. Dickerson in their conversation.
I love the illustration you give in the book of standing in your backyard, and I think it was picking a lemon or an orange or whatever it was, and you're eating the lemon and you feel the lemon juice on your lips, and you have this incredible experience with a lemon, but you fail to recognize that that lemon didn't just happen. There was a seed that was planted a long, long time ago that now allows you to enjoy that lemon juice.
That's right. It's a house we had in California. It had both an orange tree and a lemon tree. And we enjoyed that fruit for a long time until finally one day I thought, I wonder who planted those trees. And then as I was gathering all of really a number of years of research and putting it together for this book, realizing, wow, my generation in the Western world, we have essentially inherited this massive orchard of fruitful trees. And one of the chapters I spend in the book is really helping people understand what life was like before Christianity, helping people understand in our modern world where we have microwaves and air conditioning and heating and so many conveniences, what life has been like for an average person throughout history, that they were very likely a slave, that they weren't expecting to live older than 45 years, they had no dental care, they had no anesthesia, they had no modern medicine, and just the very difficult existence, and that if you remove the followers of Jesus and what they've contributed, that's where we'd be living. Now, I think the difference, if you want to really get into American history, is it seems like from about the post-World War II era until the 1980s or 90s, most educated Americans, I mean college educated, still had a sense that there was a lot of Christianity involved in where all this prosperity came from. For example, if you look at Gallup research polls, Gallup polls go back to the 1940s, and as recently as 1947, right after World War II, 90-some percent of Americans claimed to be Christians. The question was just, are you Catholic or are you Protestant? If you were to tell a young person that today, they'd probably be surprised. They don't understand just how Christian this culture, which has never been perfect, but is the most prosperous free culture in world history, how Christian it was. And so it seems like from about the end of World War II until the 1980s or 90s, that was still known, but it was taken for granted. And it's almost like the orchard was neglected a little bit, but just like those fruit trees in my backyard, the trees are so healthy, they keep producing fruit, even though I was completely neglecting those trees. Now, where I think we're reaching a turning point, and this is outside of the Jesus Skeptic book, this is just my opinion, is that in our culture, there is now such an anti-Christian sentiment that for many young people, they've been trained and indoctrinated to almost pick up an axe and go to the root of the trees and say, I believe this tree is prejudiced and bigoted, so I'm going to cut the tree down. I mean, to hear in a presidential debate a candidate for the highest office of the United States say, if a church or religious group doesn't hold to my view of morality, they should lose their tax-exempt status. That's essentially what that is. Someone who means well, taking an axe to destroy a tree that they think is against them, but is actually feeding them.
That's one of the beautiful things about your book. I mean, you go through this paradigm shift. I mean, if you're one of these people like you were just describing, and you read this book, if you have an open mind at all, I mean, everything suddenly changes because you start seeing that if you do take the axe to the root of the tree, you are taking the axe to the very thing that caused you to be able to run for president in the first place. In fact, you talk about Christianity being a keystone species for human society, that human society improves in fundamental ways when Christians are present.
Yeah, that's right. I love the keystone species idea. I don't know for anyone listening if you've ever seen a sea otter. They almost look like puppies in the ocean. They're so cute and cuddly. And in California, the California sea otter had been hunted to extinction in this area called the Monterey Bay. And after the California sea otter went away, the entire ocean ecosystem in that area died off. From little fish all the way up to great white sharks and orca whales, it all died. And ocean researchers realized that the sea otter played a crucial role in eating these things called sea urchins, which destroy the sea kelp, which feeds everything. So in very simple terms, they reintroduced the California sea otters back into that Monterey Bay. And after a few years, the entire ocean ecosystem in that area roared back to life, from small fish all the way up to great white sharks and orca whales. And so while the California sea otter looks kind of cuddly and harmless and pointless, it actually is what researchers call a keystone species. In other words, you remove that one species and the entire ecosystem falls apart, life falls apart. And that was my biggest surprise as a researcher, realizing, wow, all the best hospitals in the world were started by Christians. All the best universities in the world were started by Christians. If we remove the Christians, we lose a lot. But then even realizing things like the correlation between Christianity and women's rights, and realizing, again, speaking to the skeptic and the skeptical person, whether you believe in God or not, whether you believe in Jesus or not, if you love the women in your life, your daughters or your wife or your mom, you want them to wake up in a city that has a big church in the middle of it, because statistically, they will have more rights, they will have closer to equal pay, they will have the ability to vote and drive a car. And if they wake up in a city that has a big mosque or doesn't allow a church in the middle, then statistically, they will have far less rights. They might not even be allowed to show their face. They might not be allowed to vote or drive a car. You don't have to be religious to reach that conclusion. It might not be a popular conclusion, but it is a fact, according to the World Health Organization and the Pew Research Center, if you just look at the data. And so that's where I do make the argument in the book, hey, even before you get into believing, is there absolute truth? Is Jesus God? Can we trust the Bible? Those are all very important questions. But let's meet people where they're at. You want to make the world a better place? Well, look at this. Where followers of Jesus go, health care increases, education increases, women's rights increase. And so if we actually honestly want to make the world a better place, then we should consider this and what this Christian thing and what Jesus' teachings are all about.
The access, and you've mentioned this a couple of times already, the access to hospitals that we have in the West is simply stunning. And you look at those hospitals, and I've been in a lot of hospitals in the last 3 years, you see that those hospitals were founded by Christians or by people influenced by Christians, almost universally.
Oh, it's fascinating. In fact, the three oldest hospitals in the United States, which remain in the top 20 hospitals as far as just their quality of service, were all started by Christians. Pennsylvania Hospital, founded in 1751 by a Quaker Christian named Dr. Thomas Bond, and actually also by Benjamin Franklin. New York Presbyterian Hospital, founded in 1771 by an Episcopal Christian. And then Massachusetts General Hospital, which is well known and affiliated with Harvard University, was founded in 1811 by a Reverend John Bartlett, who was motivated by Christian charity. And actually, it's one of the interesting things. We take for granted the hospital as we know it, which didn't even exist 600 years ago. There were places that sick people could go, but it wasn't the same. You had to have the scientific revolution to get the medical science breakthroughs. But even after the scientific revolution, the way it worked was that if you were wealthy, you would pay a doctor, not a team of specialists, but one, to come to your house. and see you at your house. The doctors would make house calls. And if you were poor and you couldn't afford to call a doctor to your house, then you just suffered with your condition. And so it was Christians. This is true of the Mayo Clinic, as well as Johns Hopkins, as well as Massachusetts General. It was Christians motivated by Christian charity and the teachings of Jesus, whatever you do to the least of these, you've done unto me, who said, let's create a big house where the poor people can come, and we will pay, as Christians, we will pay the doctors, and we will find Christian doctors to come and give care to people who can't afford care. And then what happened was now you've got doctors working together, and in the case of Johns Hopkins, funded by a Quaker Christian, you get now the overlap with a research institution being right next to a university where science is happening, and you start to have breakthroughs, not only in technical medical knowledge, but in very practical setting up various wards, doctors working together, having specialties instead of every doctor being a generalist. All of this came about because of Christian charity houses that are today called hospitals.
Don't go away. We'll be right back and rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Pastor John S. Dickerson. Is Christianity good for the world? Do followers of Jesus Christ actually promote human rights, alleviate suffering, and enable humanity to flourish? In his book, Jesus Skeptic, award-winning journalist John S. Dickerson offers compelling primary evidence for the credibility of the Christian faith and shows that Jesus and his followers have indeed changed the world for good in remarkable ways. To receive a copy of Jesus Skeptic as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a strategic year-end gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Bertrand Russell famously said, most people would rather die than think, and many of them do. Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org.
Is Christianity good for the world? Do followers of Jesus Christ promote human rights, alleviate suffering, and enable humanity to flourish? In his book, Jesus Skeptic, award-winning journalist John S. Dickerson offers compelling primary evidence for the credibility of the Christian faith and shows that Jesus and his followers have indeed changed the world for good in remarkable ways. Dickerson writes, whether I like Jesus' followers or not, Jesus bears studying, for his movement has been, by multiple measures, among the most powerful movements for social good in all of human history. Be sure to read Jesus Skeptic, a journalist explores the credibility and impact of Christianity, To receive your copy as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a strategic gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org.
Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Pastor John S. Dickerson in their conversation.
You have a chapter in the book on the scientific revolution in which you make the point that if you remove Christian influence from world history, you lose the scientific revolution.
Yeah, it's one of the most countercultural claims, isn't it? I mean, that sounds like heresy today. And so in that chapter, I show so many of these primary writings. So let's start with Isaac Newton. It was Albert Einstein who said, God gave us Newton's laws of motion. And then Einstein's quote goes on to say, essentially, everything we've learned in science since Isaac Newton was because of Isaac Newton. And what did Isaac Newton believe about Jesus? Well, you don't have to read so-and-so's opinion. We can read Isaac Newton's writings for ourselves. We have thousands of pages of Isaac Newton's journals, many which have even been digitized. And in the book, Jesus Skeptic, I show people where they can go online and read Isaac Newton's journals for themselves. But what's fascinating is that Isaac Newton, because he went to Trinity College within Cambridge, he started out learning to read Scripture, like all the other students at that time. And Newton would actually put ancient manuscripts of Scripture in various languages, Syriac and Greek and Latin and Hebrew. He would compare these ancient scriptures, and Newton wrote about Jesus over and over again. And so in the book, I don't only quote him, I actually show pictures of those journals where he says things like, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. This is life eternal, that they might know the only true God and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent. If a person were just to read Isaac Newton's religious writings about Jesus and know nothing else about him, a modern person would say this is a lunatic religious fanatic who shouldn't be taken seriously. And yet it was from that mind that came some of the greatest scientific breakthroughs of history. And Newton is not like some outlier within the founders of the scientific revolution. Johannes Kepler, very similar. In fact, in Kepler's Mysterium Cosmographicum, he writes, before the universe was created, there were no numbers except the Trinity, which is God himself. And then Blaise Pascal. And if for no other reason to get the Jesus Skeptic book, you've got to read the section about Pascal's memoriam. It's a poem that he wrote, and he had four copies of it. He had a copy of it on him when he passed away, and I'll just read you part of it. God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, not of the philosophers and of the learned, God of Jesus Christ, my God and your God. And then Blaise Pascal, another founder of the scientific revolution, goes on to talk about his faith in Jesus as the Christ, and he says, joy, joy, tears of joy. This is eternal life, that they may know you, the one true God, and the one that you sent, Jesus Christ. And then, speaking as a former skeptic myself, I love this. He says, Jesus Christ, I left him, I fled him, renounced him, crucified. Let me never be separated from him again. Robert Boyle, so many others of these founders of the scientific revolution, they were not casual Christians. They had decided for themselves what they believed, and it was this view of Jesus. It is interwoven with their scientific discoveries. And how sad, how deceptive our enemy is, the same deceiver who deceived Eve in the garden, that he would teach a whole culture that inherits all these blessings and fruits to say, well, if you care about science and you're smart, you can't be a Christian, when the record is exactly the opposite.
Yeah, so what is the correlation between so many of the founders of the scientific revolution and Christianity? Is that just happenstance, or is there a reason that Christians could, in fact, be the ones in the vanguard of the scientific revolution because they believed that there was a way of thinking God's thoughts after them?
That's such a great insight, because even in today's context, you might show these evidences of Blaise Pascal or Isaac Newton. Some might say, well, it's just a coincidence. But let's zoom out and let's look at it as honest, objective researchers. in thousands of years of world history, we have this one specific moment where the scientific revolution springs forth. And it springs forth from a very small geographic area in Western Europe. It didn't spring forth from Asia or from South America. It sprang forth from one specific area and from one specific culture. And every one of these founders of the scientific revolution, by the way, one sociologist, PhD Rodney Stark, he went through more of their primary writings than I did, and he found that 98% of those founders, and he took the list from a secular research group, 98% of the founders of the scientific revolution were Christians. And the vast majority of them were very, very devout Christians, like the kind that I've cited in the book, Blaise Pascal and Isaac Newton and Johannes Kepler. And so somehow, you know, again, speaking to the skeptic, whether or not you believe in God, this is just a fact of human history. People had been tinkering with sticks and gunpowder and trying to unlock this cabinet of scientific understanding for thousands of years. Is it a coincidence that all of a sudden, after the Christian university has been training generations of Christian thinkers, the cabinet gets opened of scientific understanding, the laws of motion, etc., and every single one of the people opening it has been trained at a Christian institution, and the majority of them hold to this view that there is a creator God who is knowable, who keeps his promises, who works with decency and in order, and set up a universe structured where things can be studied and investigated because there is consistency and predictability and there are promises.
You know, I find it sort of ironic as I'm listening to you right now. In my hand, I have a pair of glasses, and just a few moments ago, you mentioned Johannes Kepler. And many, many people that might like me somewhere in the United States or even listening to this podcast maybe have the glasses on their face or in their hand or in front of them. They have very little sense, perhaps, that they can say, thank you, Kepler, because without you, I might not be holding these glasses. I might not be seeing as clearly as I am.
Isn't it fascinating that Jesus called himself the light of the world? And then it was followers of Jesus who gave light to the world, both through learning and even scientific advances that would lead to electric lights. I mean, it's so big that once you see it, everything else makes sense. And until you see it, these claims might seem like, oh, that's okay, the Christians, of course, they see it that way, they're bigoted. And that's why I'd encourage, if you're a skeptic, if you know someone who's a skeptic, get this Jesus Skeptic book so they can see the evidence for themselves.
So one of the things you mentioned earlier on in our conversation I think is fascinating, and you augment this and maybe underscore it poignantly in your book, is that we're living in the best of all worlds. We're living in a bubble, as it were, and there are so many people dissatisfied with their status in life, failing to recognize that they're two percenters in the sense that 98 of 100 people in all of history are in this bubble where we enjoy the kinds of incredible benefits that we do, including holding a pair of glasses in our hands.
That's exactly right. You know, researchers estimate that there's about 108 billion people who've ever lived on planet Earth. And the reality for 106 billion of those is that they had never taken a warm shower. They don't have any social media accounts. They don't have electricity or heat. They've watched siblings or relatives die in their own home. Many did not live past the age of 10. More than half were slaves in most civilizations. And some of this is almost teaching world history in a way that has been forgotten. For example, with slavery, that slavery was a norm on every continent. I mean, Egyptian slavery, Aztecs had slaves in Central America, North American, Native Americans had slaves. This was a global norm. So what's unique about the last 200 or 300 years isn't that slavery existed, which is horrific that it did, but that was very normal. What's unique is that it ended. And I think here's our challenge. For my millennial generation, we want to make the world a better place. And so we're focused on where we haven't yet arrived, which we have so much more work to do. We haven't arrived on racism. Racism is still such a real thing, and there are still so many wounds from it. We haven't arrived on women's rights. There are still many contexts in which a woman does not get fair and equal treatment. And so as a follower of Jesus saying, hey, look at all these advances that Christians have made, I'm not at all saying, so stop your whining and groaning about why the world's not perfect. The world still is not perfect, but let's look back at the people who've made the greatest leaps forward, like Martin Luther King Jr., who was the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and who I quote in the book repeatedly because his whole view of reality and morality came from Jesus Christ, and he talks about Jesus Christ over and over again. Abraham Lincoln, a similar follower of Jesus Christ, and those who ended slavery. And so as followers of Jesus saying Christians have advanced society forward, we're not saying we've arrived and there's no problems. I agree with many in my millennial generation in saying we still have progress to make. But where I would then differ is say, let's not forget what got us this far.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with the author of Jesus Skeptic, John S. Dickerson. In appreciation for your vital year-end gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you a copy of Jesus Skeptic, A Journalist Explores the Credibility and Impact of Christianity. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.